What's my subscription to the New York Times have me doing this week? Preparing a strawberry pretzel pie. Solving spelling bee with no hints. Planning a trip to one of the 52 best places to go. Getting to the bottom of the big pants trend.
Whoa.
And I'm finally replacing my vacuum with a recommendation I can trust. What will your subscription to the Times have you do? Why not find out? With our best offer, go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, President Trump is playing a major role in shaping the Republican tax plan. So what is a businessman who ran as a populist fighting for? And the president's tweets are condemned by the British Prime Minister. It's Thursday, November 30th.
I told you that we would be saying Merry Christmas again, right?
In St. Charles, Missouri, on Wednesday, the president came on stage to a bunch of Christmas trees in the background and a very happy crowd.
Jim Tankersley covers taxes and the economy for the Times.
He was in just a jovial mood.
Just 3 months ago, we came to this state to launch our plan to bring back Main Street by cutting taxes for American families and small businesses.
He wanted to talk about the tax bill, and he particularly wanted to brag.
I will tell you this in a non-braggadocious way. There has never been a 10-month president that has accomplished what we have accomplished, that I can tell you.
He wanted to talk about how great everything is going on in the economy right now, about how great growth is, about how low unemployment is. And then he wanted to say, and that's even before this tax cut, which, by the way, and he kept going into these step-back riffs, this tax cut's going to be terrible for me, but it's going to be great for the country.
I think my accountants are going crazy right now. It's all right. Hey, look, I'm president. I don't care. I don't care anymore. I don't care.
So this is the president basically out campaigning in the final days leading up to this expected Senate vote on the Republicans' big tax reform plan.
Yeah, it was the president feeling like a candidate again, and he looked very comfortable and very happy, and he was a salesman.
The beating heart of our plan is a tax cut for working families. That's what it is.
He was talking about how great the bill was going to be for this and how great it was going to be for that, and he was talking about being engaged with workers and how he feels like part of the middle class, and he launched into the longest riff I've heard in a long time on his famous we're going to have so much winning, we're sick of winning line.
We can't stand winning so much. Remember, I used to say that, right? I used to say it, and that's what's happening.
And it was just classic Trump, and he just seemed almost jovial in his campaigning for the tax bill.
Under our plan, middle-class families will not only see their tax bill go down, they will see their incomes go up by an average of around $4,000.
So this is the biggest legislative effort by the president and Republicans since they failed to repeal the Affordable Care Act back in the summer. And I remember the conversation then was that the president was pretty uninvolved in that legislative effort. This time seems different.
It does seem different. It's also sort of, let's grade him on a curve. For this president, it's way more involved than he was in previous legislative efforts. Mm-hmm. He has been making phone calls to senators. He has been meeting with Republicans on Capitol Hill this week to try to round up support. And he has, to some degree, been out in the country trying to make the case for the tax bill. He's gone to a few states, held a few rallies. Mm-hmm. It's been much more than he did on health care. It is also far less, for example, than President Obama did to try to sell the Affordable Care Act when Congress was considering that.
Well, why do we think it's different than with health care? Why do we think President Trump is getting more involved?
I think there's two reasons the president's getting more involved. One is just he loves this issue. He feels much more comfortable with taxes. He was talking again today. I'm a businessman. I don't really understand politics, but I'm a businessman. The second reason, though, is that this is a much more critical time for Republicans. Their failure on health care has them absolutely desperate for a victory. And so the president needs that, too. He wants a crowning legislative accomplishment. And this would be a win. He can see how close they are to a win. And I think that's why we're seeing him now in particular getting more involved.
So what exactly has the president been doing to shape this legislation and to try to get this crucial win? When does he first get involved, and what is he saying?
Well, he's been involved from the beginning. The White House worked with congressional leaders to craft a framework, some principles for the tax bill.
So this is our once-in-a-generation opportunity to deliver real tax reform for everyday, hardworking Americans.
But really, it was around August when he really started getting involved. And the first thing he did was just really hit the accelerator.
The president making his case by hitting the road, specifically Route 66, known as America's Main Street, promising to help small businesses and the middle class.
Telling Congress to get going. He wanted a tax bill. He wanted a tax bill. Mm-hmm.
And I am fully committed to working with Congress to get this job done. And I don't want to be disappointed by Congress. Do you understand me? Do you understand?
And what Republicans will tell you is that the president's pressure has really had an effect. He has absolutely sped up this process to the point where they introduced a bill in the House on November 1st, and they might pass it out of the Senate before December 1st.
Which is fast.
That would be fast for naming a post office. It's particularly fast for a 500-plus page of tax code rewrite.
So as you said, the president has been championing this as a bill primarily for the middle class. Why has he framed it that way?
He's always framed it that way. He's framed it that way in the campaign.
I am proposing an across-the-board income tax reduction, especially for middle-income Americans. This will lead to millions of new and really good-paying jobs. The rich will pay their fair share.
He is a populist politician. He has always been pitching to workers, and that has always been sort of the message that he understood really resonated in the country, and that is why Republicans have followed him in Congress. They have just been relentlessly on message saying that this would be a middle-class tax cut.
This plan is for the middle-class families in this country who deserve a break. It is for the families who are out there living paycheck to paycheck who just keep getting squeezed.
Has his influence over the past couple of months helped shape this bill into a bill for the middle class? Because, of course, there's been a lot of criticism that it's anything but a middle class tax package.
This bill would do more, by every analysis we've seen, for the wealthy and high earners than it would for the middle class. It is not a bill that is going to massively cut taxes or send more money from the federal government back to middle-class taxpayers compared to how much it sends back to corporations and high earners. Now, the president, in a couple of ways, kept the bill that way and, in fact, tried unsuccessfully to push it even more in favor of high earners. The big way he has kept the bill to favor corporations is by insisting on a cut in the corporate tax rate to no more than 20%. It's 35% at the top now. He wants it all the way down to 20%. That's a red line for the president.
From 35% to 20% in the corporate tax cut is a big cut.
It's a really big cut. It's an aggressive cut, but it's not the only thing in the bill that would help high earners. There's also a big cut for the types of businesses that Mr. Trump owns. And there is a reduction in the Senate bill in the top individual income tax rate. And the president actually pushed the Senate to make that cut bigger, and he failed.
So at the same time that the president has championed this bill as a middle-class tax bill over and over again, he has pushed the bill in directions that actually are hugely beneficial to the richest people in America, including him.
The president keeps saying that this bill is a big middle-class tax cut, and that it's going to really hurt rich people.
This is going to cost me a fortune, this thing. Believe me. Believe me. This is not good for me. Me, it's not so. I have some very wealthy friends. Not so happy with me, but that's okay. You know, I keep hearing Schumer, this is for the wealthy. Well, if it is, my friends don't know about it.
There is no evidence that it's going to really hurt rich people. Mm-hmm. And just because he says it doesn't make it true, but he keeps saying it. So he is selling the bill the way he's always sold the bill. Great for the middle class, terrible for the rich, even though every distributional table we've seen suggests that that is not the case.
Can I ask you, Jim, do you see this as a sort of quintessential effort on the part of this president to appeal to his populist base while also giving classic Republicans exactly what they want in a Republican president?
Yes, Yes, that's exactly what's going on here. The president is selling the bill to populist supporters with details in the bill that are very much loved by the big business lobbies and the big campaign donors of the Republican Party. And putting those two things together is arguably why he is president. It was the combination that gave him the job in the first place. But it's also a very good way of uniting his base coalition. Even though the bill does not poll exceedingly well among his base voters, it polls much better than it polls for the rest of the country. And there was a lot of pressure from Republican donors to get this done. And from everything I've seen, most large business groups are very happy about the results so far.
So his populist base seems to be buying the idea that this is for them.
I would say this. I think his base is buying the idea that this is good for the country. And they are hopeful that it will be good for them.
Jim Teckersley, thank you very much.
It has been my pleasure.
With Trump as your president, we are going to be celebrating Merry Christmas again, and it's going to be done with a big, beautiful tax cut. Thank you, everybody. God bless you. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thank you very much.
On Wednesday, the Senate voted to begin debate on the tax bill, staying on track for a final vote later this week. We'll be right back.
My name is Jasmine Ulloa, and I'm a national politics reporter for The New York Times. I grew up in Texas, on the border with Mexico, and I've been reporting in the region since I was in high school. Now I travel the country looking for stories and voices that really capture what immigration and the nation's demographic changes mean for people. What I keep encountering is that voters don't fall into neat ideological boxes on this very volatile issue. There's a lot of gray, and that's where I feel the most interesting stories are. I'm trying to bring that complexity and nuance to our audience, especially in such a critical election year. And that's really what all of my colleagues on the politics team and every journalist at the New York Times is aiming to do. Our mission is to help you understand the world, no matter how complicated it might be. If you want to support this mission, consider subscribing to The New York Times. You can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
The president shared three videos with his Twitter followers on Wednesday morning. What's going on in these videos?
These were videos posted by an extreme right-wing group called Britain First.
Dan Bilewski is a Times reporter in London.
The first video shows a person who the group reports to be Muslim beating up a Dutch boy on crutches, violently hitting him. The second video shows a man with a beard destroying what appears to be a statue of the Virgin Mary. And the third video shows men, again, whom the group has said are Muslim, pushing a teenage boy off a roof and beating him to death.
This group, Britain First, what do we know about it? What is it?
So,
we are at war with Islam. The world is at war with Islam.
Yes. We know that while they have a large following on social media, they're essentially a fringe group. They have about 1,000 members. They're only able to mobilize a few hundred people to some of their marches. And they conduct direct actions such as, you know, pouring beer near mosques, invading mosques nor in acts of so-called intimidation.
You, sir, are my enemy. Jesus Christ said, I do not come in peace, but I come with a sword.
And they go through immigrant neighborhoods with large Muslim populations and picket with Union Jacks and wooden crosses and intimidate the population and rail against Muslim headscarves and other cultural manifestations of Islam.
Go back to Saudi Arabia and marry a six-year-old like your prophet did.
And who are they in Britain, and who do they want to be? Are they a political party? Are they just
intended to... They claim to be a patriotic political party. They shroud themselves under the banner of being Christians.
Then you let your people know that us Christians are not to be messed with, and you pick the wrong fight. Now I suggest you go.
So the president sees these three videos that were tweeted out by this far-right group in Britain, videos that were very dubious in authenticity and in origin, but that very clearly claimed to be acts of violence by Muslims towards non-Muslims or non-Muslim icons, and shares them with his followers on Wednesday morning.
Yes.
And what's the reaction in Britain when he does it?
Donald Trump has once again caused a stir on both sides of the Atlantic.
President Trump's Twitter account
has retweeted three inflammatory anti-Muslim videos
posted by a member of a far-right group.
Even by his own standards, this is a fairly extraordinary thing to share with his 43 or so million followers.
It's a real problem for the British government now, is it not?
The political class across the political spectrum is quite shocked.
Order! The President of the United States has in recent moments been retweeting comments from a far-right organization, Britain First, highly inflammatory videos.
So everyone from Downing Street to the head of the opposition to human rights groups have castigated Trump.
Given the significance and the seriousness of having the President of the United States giving her such a huge platform, does he not think it would be appropriate for us to hear some word of condemnation and raising this from the Home Secretary or the Foreign Secretary?
So people are very, very upset.
And what about the Prime Minister, Theresa May?
Theresa May, who's made it a huge priority to be close to President Trump, through number 10 Downing Street, castigated President Trump's retweets of these videos, unequivocally saying, that they had no place in this country.
A spokesman for the British Prime Minister, Theresa May, said it was wrong for Mr. Trump to have retweeted them, adding that Britain First used hateful narratives and lies.
And obviously it's happening at a very polarised moment for her, so it complicates things for her.
While there are benefits of selective and controlled immigration, at best, the net economic and fiscal effect of high immigration is close to zero. So there is no case in the national interest for immigration of the scale we have experienced over the last decade.
Since Britain's vote last year to leave the European Union, there have been a number of anti-Muslim and anti-immigrant episodes in which immigrants have been targeted.
There's a growing sense that the vote to leave the European Union has acted as a sort of dog whistle to validate the views of the far right.
The last thing she needs is the President of the United States retweeting the anti-Muslim videos of an extremist group that is on the fringes of Britain.
Would you please leave the area for your own safety?
There are armed police in the area. How clear do I need to be? Move out of this area!
Yes, hello. I'm currently on London Bridge at the moment. About 10 minutes or so ago, a white van driver came speeding, probably about 50 miles an hour, veered off the road into the crowds of people that were walking, pedestrians walking along the pavement. He swerved right round me and then hit about five or six people.
And then we heard gunfire outside. And some people saw armed police kind of patrolling the area around the restaurant.
Just got getting a report now from Greater Manchester Police, who are now saying that there have been confirmed a number of fatalities following reports of an explosion at Manchester Arena. So Greater Manchester Police now saying that some people have died as a result of that incident at that arena.
Is it possibly because the threat of terrorism is so real in Britain, and the Muslim population there is so on edge, that Britain has to condemn such videos while perhaps President Trump can promote them?
I think 100% that in the current environment in Britain, when there has been a spate of terrorist attacks perpetrated by Muslim extremists, it is imperative for the Prime Minister to come down against, the retweeting of a group fanning racial and anti-Muslim hatred in particular. There is a very large Muslim population in Britain, And the risk of harmony imploding is very important to mitigate against that.
And Dan, I assume you've kind of walked the streets of London today and you've talked to people. Like, as a reporter who's been there a while, what are people saying to you about this?
People are really utterly shocked, Michael. I mean, they're utterly shocked that the president of the United States, the leader of the free world, who's supposed to be the moral voice, could retweet what many people view, fairly or not, as incendiary videos, and to retweet the videos of a group that's been completely and utterly discredited. All we can say is that a group that hitherto operated on the fringes and in obscurity suddenly was given the bullpit of the presidential Twitter account and went from zero to being widely retweeted today. And it's the group everyone is talking about the world over.
On Wednesday night, President Trump tweeted at Prime Minister Theresa May, quote, "Don't focus on me. Focus on the destructive radical Islamic terrorism that is taking place within the United Kingdom. We are doing just fine." Here's what else you need to know today.
This is a sad morning here at Today and at NBC News. Just moments ago, NBC News Chairman Andy Lack sent the following note to our organization. "Dear colleagues, on Monday night, we received a detailed complaint from a colleague about inappropriate sexual behavior in the workplace by Matt Lauer. It represented, after serious review, a clear violation of our company's standards. As a result, we have decided to terminate his employment."
On Wednesday morning, just a couple of hours after being told of her co-host's firing, Savannah Guthrie delivered the news at the top of the show.
"While it is the first complaint about his behavior in the over 20 years he has been at NBC News, we were also presented with reason to believe this may not have been an isolated incident. Our highest priority is to create a workplace environment where everyone feels safe and protected, and to ensure that any actions that run counter to our core values are met with consequences, no matter who the offender."
By the end of the day, NBC had received at least two more complaints of inappropriate sexual contact by Lauer. One former NBC employee told The Times that Lauer summoned her to his office in 2001, locked the door, and sexually assaulted her. Afterward, she said, she passed out and had to be taken to a nurse.
"And we are grappling with a dilemma that so many people have faced these past few weeks. How do you reconcile your love for someone with the revelation that they have behaved badly?" And I don't know the answer to that. But I do know that this reckoning that so many organizations have been going through is important. It's long overdue. And it must result in workplaces where all women, all people feel safe and respected. As painful as it is, this moment in our culture and this change had to happen."
Yeah, it did.
Shortly after the news of Lauer's firing broke, Minnesota Public Radio announced that it was severing all ties with Garrison Keillor, creator and host of Prairie Home Companion, because of inappropriate behavior with a coworker. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.